After Barack Obama's historical presidential nomination and after a long campaign spent fervently supporting the man who would become America's first black president, Tanner Colby, who is perhaps most widely known for his biographies of Chris Farley and John Belushi, realized that despite his open-minded liberal attitudes and his hip Brooklyn zip code, he didn't actually know any black people. Some of My Best Friends Are Black is a book that covers the clash over school busing in the suburbs of Birmingham, Alabama, Kansas City neighborhood's fight against housing discrimination and the sordid history of real estate segregation, the curious racial divide of the Madison Avenue ad world and a Louisiana Catholic parish's 40-year effort to build an integrated church. Taken together, these stories paint a multifaceted picture of race as it is lived in America. It's a great pleasure to welcome Tanner Colby to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
It's a great pleasure. Again, the name of the book, Some of My Best Friends Are Black, The Strange Story of Integration in America. As I mentioned in the introduction, this idea, you started to think about this following the election of Barack Obama.
I did. It wasn't so much a slow process of thinking as a random epiphany. It's like, huh, wait a minute. I don't actually know any black people. And, you know, here I am, you know, thumping myself on the back for voting for Obama. And I thought, well, you know, given we've had 40 years of school busing and affirmative action and all these other things, I should probably know more black people if things had worked out. Clearly they didn't in many ways, despite having a black president. So I set out to dig into my own past and to look at the worlds that I came from and find out why.
So you have made a career so far of writing about comedians with substance abuse issues. So then you say, okay, I'm going to completely ditch that,
right,
and I'm going to go into this very weighty topic of race in America.
Yeah.
And you take a very personal approach, but I assume there was a little trepidation.
I think I was probably too ignorant to be trepidatious. I mean, if I'd known what I was getting into and what I would wind up dealing with, you know, I might have turned around. But, you know, I just sort of said, you know what, I don't want to write about dead fat comedians anymore. I've sort of tapped that out. And I really want to do something different, and this is big. And I really only do well as a writer and as a person if I'm in over my head. If I throw myself into the deep end of the pool and said, okay, well, now you have to learn how to swim, then I figure it out. Otherwise, you know, I'm kind of bored. So I figured, you know, I'll just go for it. And so I did, and I wound up, it took 4 years to write the book. And, you know, each section of the book is really almost a book's worth of information in itself, because it deals with schools, real estate, workplace, and the church, all of which could very well be the subject of their own book. But I wanted to look at them all in context, because they're all very interrelated.
At what point in the process and how did you choose to divide your research up into those categories of looking, okay, I'm going to look at the suburbs, I'm going to look at education, I'm going to look at churches, I'm going to look at advertising?
Well, the main sort of guiding idea behind it was to look at what I call the public square, which I didn't want to look at. You know, obviously racial integration in the military has been a huge influence, and, you know, things like the music business are very, very integrated. But those are all very unique. We're not all rock superstars, and we haven't all been in the Army. But pretty much everyone has been to school, and, you know, we all live in an apartment or a house, or we all go to work. And so I wanted to look at places that were common in the sense that everyone has a reference point. You know, not everyone went to a high school like my high school, which was a white flight suburb of Birmingham, Alabama, where we had, you know, our mascot was a Confederate rebel and our official school flag was a Confederate flag. That's a pretty unique experience that I documented there. But, of course, everyone has, you know, gone to school. So you can take that experience and relate it to your own. And that was my initial reason for putting them all together like that. But as I looked at it more and more, what I realized in doing the research is that, you know, the lawyers and the academics and the sociologists who really study this topic sort of do it in various isolated disciplines. People will spend a whole book on school segregation and have, like, you know, a few paragraphs about housing discrimination. well, school segregation is at root a housing problem because it's about where people can live and afford to live and pay property taxes, and that has a huge impact on schools. And similarly with the workplace, you know, people talk about workplace discrimination and racial balance and, you know, the EEOC and all these discrimination lawsuits, but at root, the problem in the workplace is a social and cultural problem. It's about our inability to, and that sort of grew out of my research of the advertising industry, which is that advertising industry is an old boys network. If you're in, you're in. If you're not, you're not. And it's all who you know. And because there are no qualifications to work in advertising, there's no law degree, there's no nothing. So it's all based on relationships and who you know. And the NAACP is trying to sue Madison Avenue for saying, well, that's discrimination, because all these white people know each other and black people are in their own social sphere and therefore they can't get in the industry, so that equals discrimination, which in a technical legal sense may be true. But when I saw that the NAACP was making that case, I was like, well, why would you try and build, because what they want to do is put in like a bureaucratic structure that says, all right, you must interview so many black people for every position and so on and so forth. But if the problem is the black and white people aren't friends, why not solve that? Why build a bureaucratic workaround to compensate for that instead of going and solving the problem of why black people and white people aren't friends? Because that ultimately, at the end of the day, what I came around to at the end of my research was that all these things we talk about racial balance in neighborhoods and zip codes and schools and all these programs we put in place, a lot of that is necessary, but none of it is sufficient if we're not going to actually form a social contract together and get to know each other socially and be friends with each other, then we're never really going to repair the nation.
You tell the story about polling your friends and talking about this and saying, do you know any, have any really real black friends? And one of your friends said, you mean ones who aren't on television?
Yes.
And that's, I mean, that's sad, but yet right, it's very true for a lot of people.
Yes. It is. And what my initial bout of research was when I started researching the book, I went on Facebook because I wanted to get in touch with everyone from my high school to see what their experience was, to make sure that, you know, it wasn't just my perception. I wanted to, you know, validate what my memories were. And so as I was getting on Facebook, I'm like, well, should I email everyone? Should I send them a poll or a questionnaire, or what should I do? And then I was like, wait a minute, I'm on Facebook. I can see how many black friends everyone doesn't have. And so I just started counting, you know, going through and looking at all the profile pictures of everybody's friends, which took about 2 days and three or four bottles of wine to go through it all. And I counted up about 11,000 first-degree friends of people that I graduated from high school with. And out of those 11,000 people, I found 156 black people total.
So What does that tell you about, and I'm interested, because can you discount the fact of growing up in a Southern high school? I mean, it does that play a role in this?
You know, every area is unique, but if you look at, you know, Seattle and Tacoma, if you look at Portland has almost no black people at all, because I don't know how much you know about the history of Portland, but Portland or Oregon used to have one of the worst Jim Crow laws in the country up until the Civil War, and that right, black people were not allowed inside Oregon. And that's why any blacks who went to the Northwest went up to Seattle, because they got to the Oregon Territory and they were told, no, you have to go over to Washington. And actually the Washington State, the petition to found Washington State was founded by a black man named, strangely enough, George Bush. It plays different in all different places. Our Southern high school was certainly unique in the way it was segregated. But you come here to New York, where I live here, is very balkanized. You have Harlem, you have Fort Greene and Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights, and then you have neighborhoods like I live in, Carroll Gardens, which is a completely, you know, almost entirely white neighborhood. So it's not specifically a Southern problem. It manifests you in unique ways in the South, but it's a problem everywhere.
What do you see as the good news from your research?
For me, the good news, and it's funny because the reaction to the book and a lot of the reviews has been, some people have said, terribly bleak and depressing and just hopeless. And other people have said it's incredibly hopeful and optimistic. And I tend to go with the latter assessment. I certainly came out of it in a very optimistic frame of mind, because while we've put all these massive institutional barriers in the way of integration, so it's like, you know, expensive housing that blocks access to good schools and so on and so forth, what it takes to integrate is really, you know, all I did, starting from a point of zero, of not knowing any black people, all I did was read books and have the courage to go out and talk to people. And if you just educate yourself and engage with other human beings, that's all racial integration is, really. We've put a whole lot of sociological academic theories behind what is integration and what are race relations, and, you know, we really sort of overcomplicated the issue by talking about it in all these academic ways, but it's really just educating yourself and engaging with people. And it's not about putting all these massive programs and things in place to help black people. It's more about just white people choosing to be better white people. And it's also about black people choosing to give up the comfort zones of their all-black neighborhoods and their all-black institutions and to go out and engage more with the world.
That's what I liked about the book. A lot of it is on us.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when I came out of it, I went out and just decided to learn about other people, and I came out on the other end of that process a better informed and more thoughtful human being, and that's really all that it is. No diversity program or anything like that was going to change who I was until I decided to do it. So the hopefulness of it is that while there are a great many barriers, assuming you have the socioeconomic means to move, forward in any way, which, structural poverty is a problem for too many black Americans and for a lot of white Americans, to not have the social mobility to make choices to move to a different place or to get into a better school. But if you do have that social mobility, then the fact of integration is very much within anyone's grasp, because you just go out and you do it.
The book is very incisive and candid. It is Some of My Best Friends Are Black, The Strange Story of Integration in America. It is published by Viking. Tanner Colby, I thank you very much for joining us this morning. A great pleasure to speak with you, and I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you very much. And if anyone wants to buy it or find out more or read the reviews, they're all online at TannerColby.com.
TannerColby.com. Tanner, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Again, the name of the book, Some of My Best Friends Are Black. It's published by Viking. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.